Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So there are just two chapters left in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The notes which you have in the study guide are really... they sort of go halfway in chapter 6 and then, yeah, that's about it, about halfway. It's not really very complete at all, unfortunately. But it's very dramatic, quite amazing, how Gopakumar goes to Goloka Vrindavan and meets Krishna and enters into his eternal relationship with Krishna. Very amazing. Today we're going to attempt to go through half of that chapter. We'll see how it goes. It's a very long chapter, 380 verses. So if we can get halfway, that'd be pretty good. So there are three main sections which we're going to try to go through. They're written on the board here. First of all, Gopakumar goes there. And when he is there, he looks around and meets Krishna, eventually. Then, second section, Gopakumar goes with Krishna to his house. And there's some pastimes there. Then the next morning, they get ready for going out herding the cows in their different pastimes, as they prepare to go. So the last day, Narada Muni and Uddhava had been speaking to Gopakumar, and Narada Muni had told Gopakumar, you go back to Vrindavan and follow the process. You practice Vaidhisadhana Bhakti, but then you try to be attached to the inhabitants of Vrindavan and how they serve Krishna. And in this way, you'll become qualified to go to Goloka Vrindavan and or see Krishna in Gokula. So Gopakumar, he did that. He went back. And he wandered around the different pastime places here in Vrindavan as Narada Muni had instructed him, following the process given to him. And as a result, he became very advanced in Krishna consciousness. He began to experience the symptoms of prema, which Narada Muni had talked about, like, for example, not knowing whether he was burning in a fire, a great fire, or swimming in the cool waters of the Yamuna. We might wonder, how would it be possible to be unclear in such a situation? But that is the nature of prema. So, as a result, Gopakumar, he was experiencing all these things. It was a little bewildering and he didn't know, am I making progress or not? Am I going to be successful or not? Even the idea entered his mind, am I being deceived by some great deceiver? Then one day in the same grove that he's in right now, speaking to the Brahman, he fell unconscious. And in that state of unconsciousness or semi-consciousness, Krishna appeared to him. The Lord came forward as Gopakumar was lying there, dazed, and the Lord wiped the perspiration from Gopakumar's forehead and very gently brought him back to consciousness. Gopakumar smelt the Lord's fragrance. It was overpowering and most amazingly beautiful. But he because he was half conscious, he wasn't sure, is this real or not? So he grabbed hold of the Lord. He tried to grab the Lord's dhoti, but the Lord jumped back. So Gopakumar chased him. The Lord went behind a tree and hid. Gopakumar became bewildered and fell unconscious backwards into the Yamuna. As he lost consciousness, he felt himself being carried along by the waves of the Yamuna. The next thing he knew, he was being transported in some extraordinary vehicle past Vaikuntha, then Ayodhya, then Dwarka. Finally, he came to Goloka. He stepped out on Goloka. And what did he see? Dadu? Anyway, he saw that it looked the same as Gokula. The people looked the same. And they were speaking the same language. Their customs were the same. So he arrived in Goloka, but he actually arrived at Mathura. That's sort of on the edge. In Mathura, he heard that Kamsa was ruling. This is now in Goloka Vrindavan. Kamsa was ruling, and he was terrorizing everyone. Recently, he had arrested Vasudevan Devaki. And all the members of the Yadu dynasty were either hiding or had surrendered to Kamsa. So Gopakumar decided he wanted to get out of there. He didn't want to be captured by Kamsa. So he left Mathura and headed towards Vrindavan. On the way, he met some people who were picking flowers. They looked like cowherd people, but they were so absorbed in their service of picking flowers. It was like they were unaware that he was present. Gopakumar asked them, he said, "Please be merciful to me. Tell me, who is the king here? Where does he live? How does one get to his palace?" But those people did not reply. They didn't say anything. They didn't even acknowledge his existence. Gopakumar begged them, cried, appealed to them plaintively. "At least make some gesture, point in the right direction." He got no response whatsoever. So, and he asked them, "Are you under the influence of a great deceiver?" He was in anxiety. "Maybe I'm being cheated here at the last moment." Nobody said anything. So, he was searching around and encountering one person after another and one group of people after another and begging them, "Please tell me, where am I? Who is the king? Where do I go?" Everyone was so busy, no one spoke to him. Finally, he came across one old man who was just sitting chanting, "Krishna, Krishna, 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 Krishna," endlessly, with intense emotion, sobbing and crying profusely. with great difficulty, Gopikumar managed to communicate with him and found out that the town, there was a town nearby. He said, the old man told him, this is the town of Nanda Maharaj. Gopikumar immediately fainted. The old man picked him up and revived Gopikumar. Gopikumar went running into the town, and there he saw things more amazing. Thousands and millions of times more amazing than he had seen anywhere before. Unseen, unheard of, and unimaginable by anyone from this world. So Gopikumar, he looked at the people, he couldn't tell. Are they happy? I mean, are they overcome with happiness? Or are they overcome with distress and suffering? And for a moment he wondered, am I in the material world still? But then he thought, no, no. I'm above all material worlds. I'm above all the spiritual worlds. I am in Goloka. So he found one old lady and begged her, please tell me, where is Nanda Nandan playing today? She told him that he went out early in the morning to herd the cows. He would be back in the evening. He looked around. He saw all the people were looking down the road. Their eyes were fixed on the road. Even the trees were waiting with their leaves erect with ecstasy. Gopikumar looked down the road and his legs froze with ecstasy. Then he heard a certain sound, mixture of sounds. He heard the mooing of cows, but mixed in with it was the most incredible flute music. He'd never heard anything like that before. Sap came pouring out of the trees like tears. All the animals started shedding tears. Milk came from the breasts of the ladies in showers. Even the very old ladies, the Yamuna stopped flowing, all because of the sound of this flute. So Gopikumar questioned himself, is the sound of this flute poison, a fatal poison, or is it the nectar of immortality? Is it harder than a thunderbolt or softer than water? Does it burn like a great fire, or is it cooling like the moon? So Gopikumar is just becoming more and more overwhelmed and bewildered by the arisal of Krishna Prem. So then the ladies came running out of the houses. Some came with arati paraphernalia, with ornaments and food for Krishna. Others were just running in the direction of the flute music and stumbling in a great frenzy of affection and love. The clothes of some of them were in complete disarray. Different pieces of clothing in the wrong place. Some pieces missing altogether, some not attached properly, some falling off. Some just stayed in their houses, stunned like trees. Others fainted and fell to the ground. Some of those who had fainted were carried. Their friends picked them up and carried them. And he saw that the faces of these ladies were wet with tears and saliva. Some of them ran forward and called out to the others, "Come, come and see him." So Gopakumar, he ran also. And then he saw Krishna. And Krishna saw him. So Krishna turned to Sridham, the brother of Radharani, and said, "See, this is your brother, Sarup, the son of your family." So Gopakumar is about to undergo a change of name. From Gopakumar, he's going to become Sarup. Gopakumar means, of course, cowherd boy. Sarup means his form, his natural form. So Krishna ran forward, leaving all the cowherd boys and cows behind. He ran forward to greet Gopakumar Sarup, looking extremely beautiful in his forest dress with a garland of Kadamba flowers, peacock feather crown, beautiful fragrance, amazingly beautiful face with a wonderful smile, merciful lotus eyes, and effulgence like a rainbow, just lighting up the whole sky. His hands pushing the hair away from his eyes, his feet touching the ground just to grace the ground. Gopakumar, as he saw Krishna running towards him, he realized that not only do I love Krishna, but Krishna has affection for me. And he fainted on the ground. So Krishna came to him, picked him up, holding him by the neck. But then, and Gopakumar started to become conscious again, but then Krishna fainted. Crying and crying, Krishna fainted on the ground, his tears muddying the dust and the earth. Even though he was unconscious, some gopis came. They asked, "Who did this? Who is trying to kill us?" They think something has really happened to Krishna. Something serious, problem. "Who's trying to kill us?" Then they looked at Gopakumar, Sarup, and they realized they didn't recognize him because he's been away a long time. So they ask each other, "Who is this?" And someone suggested, "Perhaps he was sent by Kamsa, the great wizard, to kill Krishna." So now Gopakumar, they're all looking at him. What has he done to our Krishna? So from the supreme ecstasy, Gopakumar goes to the supreme distress in the space of a few seconds. Then Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda came, running, stumbling, crying out, "Alas, alas," overcome with bewilderment. And then the animals came and saw Krishna. Let me just read how Sanatana Goswami describes that. Following them, the cows, bulls, calves, black deer, and other animals came forward. Seeing Krishna in this condition, they cried in agony. The animals' faces were drenched with floods of tears. They bellowed out of love, and each gently approached Krishna, repeatedly smelling and licking him. Birds flew about in the sky, expressing their misery. In great numbers, they made a tumultuous noise, like that of people crying. The immovable entities were also pained within and seemed to suddenly dry up. What more need be said? All beings, moving and non-moving, almost died. So Gopikumar didn't know what to do. He was drowning in an unlimited ocean of sorrow. All he could do was pick up Krishna's feet, put them on his head, and sob and lament uncontrollably. Then Lord Balaram came, very fearful. He had fallen behind when Krishna had run ahead to meet Gopikumar. So after Balaram cried a little, he composed himself. And Lord Balaram is particularly intelligent when it comes to figuring out how to deal with difficult situations. He is the Supreme Master, so he thought of a plan. He took Gopikumar by the arm and made Gopikumar hold Krishna by the neck. And then he took Gopikumar's other hand and with his own hand made Gopikumar's hand stroke the forehead of Krishna until Gopikumar got the idea and started stroking the Lord's forehead himself, wiping away the tears which were closing the eyes of the Lord. So as Gopikumar was doing that, suddenly Krishna came to consciousness. And then everyone was very happy with Gopikumar. Oh, he revived our Lord. What a wonderful person. And Krishna just grabbed hold of Gopikumar and kissed him. So then he looked around and saw so many people were there, and he felt embarrassed and got up. So then Krishna took Gopikumar by the hand, and together they walked into the village, Krishna asking Gopikumar questions like, "Where have you been? I have not seen you for such a long time. Are you well? How is your health?" In this way, they went into the village. So when they entered the village, all the forest animals had to stay outside. So they stayed there the whole night, just waiting. The birds flew overhead and finally settled in the trees, also to wait for the next morning when Krishna would come out again. And they were all making loud cries of separation. So now, some pastimes with Krishna in the house of Nanda and Yashoda. So, normally, Krishna and Balaram, they milk the cows when they get home. But tonight, Nanda Maharaj was in anxiety. He told them, "No, you don't worry about milking the cows. You just go in and see your mother. otherwise she may chastise me." So they went in, and there was Mother Yashoda. Her clothes were wet from the milk from her breasts and from her tears. Brihad Bhagavatamrita says that she and Rohini offered arati to Krishna, and Yashoda, caressing her son Krishna with the hair of her own head, affectionately embracing him and kissing him. Yashoda could not decide whether to keep Krishna on her head for his protection, or on her chest, or within her womb. She became bewildered out of affection for Krishna. So seeing out when they were out there in the fields and Krishna fainted and everything, having seen how much Krishna loved Gopikumar, who is now called Sarup, so we'll now call him Sarup, if you've got that. Seeing how much Krishna loved Sarup, Mother Yashoda also greeted him very affectionately. Then some of the gopis, young girls, just burst in, without any concern for what is right or wrong or socially acceptable or what anyone might think. They just burst in. And Krishna, seeing them, eager to have some pastimes with them, told Mother Yashoda, "Quickly, prepare dinner. I'm hungry. Fetch our father. Feed us as soon as you can." So Mother Yashoda, of course, immediately agreed, yes. And the gopis said, "Yes, you do that. We will bathe Krishna and Balaram." So, of course, you know, they're the same age, and normally you wouldn't expect, you know, at that age or, you know, that stage, for young girls the same age as young boys to bathe them. But Mother Yashoda, she saw those girls as little girls. So she immediately thought, "Oh yes, that's all right." And she agreed to let them bathe Krishna and Balaram. So they did. First of all, they bathed Balaram very quickly because they felt embarrassed. They wanted him to go as quickly as possible so they could associate with Krishna. So they bathed Lord Balaram very quickly and sent him to fetch Nanda Maharaj. Then they removed Krishna's ornaments, wiped him clean with their own clothes, and then they told him that you will have to put your flute down. Just give it to us. Krishna didn't want to do that. They were winking at each other. But Sarup was there. So Krishna winked at him and made a gesture and threw the flute to Sarup. So he held it for safekeeping, because the flute is the famous competitor of the gopis. So then the gopis, very softly and very expertly, massaged Krishna's body with fragrant oils. But then as they were massaging him so nicely, suddenly Krishna made a face like, "Oh, that hurts," and called out in pain. Mother Yashoda came in great anxiety. But then she saw Krishna was smiling. So she went out, and the gopis felt relieved. They thought they were in big trouble there. So they started singing songs and continuing the massage. Then they bathed him with very fragrant, clear Yamuna water from little jeweled pots. They dressed him as a dramatic actor. and decorated him according to his tastes with ornaments, clothes, and jewels, and whatever he liked. Then very quickly, so Mother Yashoda would not see, they fed him some butter. They didn't want Mother Yashoda to see because they knew that if she did see, she'll get into anxiety and get on their case, being worried that Krishna would get indigestion, eating between meals. So then they decorated him with chandan and put kajal, collyrium, around his eyes, trying to keep steady hands. But Krishna was in a playful mood. He was joking with them and touching them and doing various things like this. So the conjugal mood was increasing and increasing. So they had to repeatedly redo the decorations. They would make a decoration, but then Krishna would move. So, you know, there would be a line across his face. So they'd have to redo it. Mother Yashoda came in several times and saw these rather messy decorations and became angry, saying, "You girls, you're too unreliable. I can't let you do this again." So they were trying their best. Then one older gopi, she noticed that Krishna, he was just in a humorous mood. So she told Mother Yashoda, "Actually, these girls have made Krishna look very beautiful." And Mother Yashoda said, "Huh, beauty. Krishna is worshipped by all types of beauty. The beauty of all these girls put together doesn't equal the beauty of one of his toenails." Yes, so Krishna, he's the topmost romantic hero, and Srimati Radharani is the topmost romantic heroine. So then some pastimes while eating Srimati Radharani's cooking. So Nanda Maharaj came in. Krishna was sitting on his left, Balaram on his right. You know why Krishna was on his left and Balaram was on his right? Because it is easier to feed someone from your right hand by turning around like this than by sort of going like that. You know, it's more natural. So, therefore, Krishna was sitting on his left. Nanda Maharaj wanted to feed him personally. So it was an amazing meal. Like something we've never seen before at all. It had all good qualities of fragrance, color, and taste, and appearance, and texture, and everything. And Krishna devoured everything enthusiastically. So then there's a description of the meal. Interesting meal. First, he had warm sweet rice with ghee and sugar, with jalebis, cakes, pies, and breads. That was the first course. Then fried things and yogurt and other preparations made with yogurt and milk. Then white, warm, fragrant rice with little fried dal balls and dal cakes. Spinach preparations, soups, and different vegetables. Then after that, a whole range of sweet and sour milk products, sweet milk products and sour milk products, and many spicy things. Then Shrikhand and salty lassi. While eating, he fed Sarup with his own hand. So all the gopis brought things that they'd cooked in their own houses, and Krishna was accepting them. Then Srimati Radharani came with the pièce de résistance, or something like that, the ultimate creation, a collection of many Manoha Ladus. Mana means mind and hara means to steal. So these are like the supreme sweets, and if you eat one, it steals your mind. She came with a whole lot of them. Different shapes and forms, some big ones, some small ones, in different, you know, forms and very exotic. So Krishna took one, put it by his nose and smelt it, and had a little puzzled look on his face. He then put it in his mouth and took a bite, suddenly made a horrible face, just like he had eaten a mouthful of neem. Bitter and just like shocking taste. And he spat it out. Balaram, who understood, smiled. Mother Yashoda, who didn't understand, looked angrily at Radharani. Radharani and her friends almost panicked. And Chandravali, Radharani's competitor, and her friends smiled. Krishna took all those sweets and just threw them onto the plate of Sarup, like, I'm getting rid of these. So Sarup thought, well, better try it. So he took a taste, and he found that he'd never tasted a sweet like this in his life. Anything near like this. It was completely out of this world. Then he saw Krishna glancing at Radharani out of the corners of his eyes, moving his eyebrows. And he realized, this is a special pastime here. So then, Krishna chewed some pan and then gave it to Sarup. Mother Yashoda took Krishna on her lap and rubbed his tummy with her left hand to help with digestion. Nanda Maharaj went out to the cow pastures. Balaram went to sleep. And then Krishna went out to sing to the cows. Then some pastimes at night. Mother Yashoda called Krishna in and told him it was time for bed. Sarup came also. It was the most beautiful room. The bed had clean white cotton sheets, as soft and white as milk. Soft pillows, some which looked like the full moon, and others in different shapes, all on an effulgent base, made with, or bedecked with, priceless gems, with a beautiful canopy with pearls around it. Srimati Radharani had made some pan for Krishna, and she put it into his mouth, while Chandravali and Lalita massaged Krishna's feet. Some of the gopis fanned Krishna, some held more pan, some had containers to catch pieces of pan which might fall from his mouth. Others had containers of water. Some sang songs. Some recited prayers. Others conversed with him in very pleasant ways. And he reciprocated by giving them all pan which he had chewed, but in such ways that none of them could see that he was giving it to any other of them. So then Krishna made some gesture to them with his eyebrows, indicating, "I'll meet with you shortly," and then rolled over to go to sleep. So Sridham took Sarup to his house, because that is Sarup's house also, their brothers. And in the morning, actually that night, Sarup couldn't sleep. He was just thinking of seeing Krishna again. The next morning, early, he and Sridham went to see Krishna. Krishna was totally wiped out. He was completely devastated on the bed. Mother Yashoda was trying to wake him up. He was showing signs of conjugal pastimes. But Mother Yashoda was misreading these signs. The gopis were there. They had just come back from having pastimes with him all night. They were feeling embarrassed and fearful. Will Mother Yashoda figure out what we have been up to? But no problem, she didn't figure it out, because she's seeing everything from her motherly perspective. She thought he was so tired still, because he had used so much energy herding the cows very enthusiastically all day. It just completely wiped himself out. She didn't know he'd been up all night dancing like mad. She thought that thorns had cut his body when he went deep into the forest, but actually it was the fingernails of the gopis. He thought that the kajal from his eyes had smeared all over his body, but it was the kajal from the gopis' eyes. She thought that pan juice from his mouth had smeared all over him, but it was actually from the lips of the gopis. And that his garland and necklace had broken while he was rolling in his sleep, but actually they broke while he was dancing and having other pastimes with the gopis. She thought that the kumkum from the breasts of the gopis was colored dust from the shore of the Yamuna. Then she chastised the gopis. They thought, she's figured it out. And she said, "You girls did not decorate him properly last night. Otherwise, things wouldn't have become so messed up like this." And then they realized they had not been caught, so they smiled. So then Krishna prepared to take the cows to the fields. When Krishna finally dragged himself out of bed, having had maybe 15 minutes sleep the whole night, Mother Yashoda dressed and decorated him and made him eat. After he ate, she forced him to take a little rest. But then he just had a little chat with the gopis for a while. They just kind of forced their way in as usual. Mother Yashoda got the gopis to sing auspicious songs, carry auspicious things like water pots and so on and so forth in preparation for an auspicious leaving by Krishna. Then Mother Yashoda put auspicious herbs and ointments and ornaments on Krishna and Balaram's limbs. She got a lot of older ladies to give benedictions and blessings, and got Krishna to perform some rituals for his, to create auspiciousness for his excursion. Krishna took his lunchbox, called the cows to stand up, and set out with the cows in front, playing his flute. All his friends gathered, playing flutes, bugles, buffalo horns. Some of them had blades of grass, and they were blowing on those blades of grass. I don't know if you know how to do that, making some noise like that. So it was an amazing sound, all these instruments. Balaram was in the front, Sarup at the back, and the gopis were following on some pretext. So then Mother Yashoda saw that Krishna's face had already started perspiring. So she wiped his face dry and followed him to the edge of the village. So Krishna told Mother Yashoda, "All right, Mata, you can go back now." Mother Yashoda turned around, took two or three steps back, and stopped, and turned around again. She came back. She quickly got some pan and gave it to Krishna. And Krishna told her, "Thank you, Mata. You can go back now." She turned to go back, but then she turned around to follow Krishna again. This time she made him eat some fruits and sweets and also have something to drink. And then she turned back, back to the house again. But again she turned around and followed Krishna. This time she adjusted Krishna's clothing and turned around to go back. But she turned around and followed Krishna again. This time she gave him some instructions. "Now don't go too far into that forest. Don't go into the parts where there are thorns. Watch out for the stones." These types of instructions. She beseeched him again and again, and then turned around and went back, but turned back and came back to Krishna. Every time Krishna is moving a few steps, and Mother Yashoda is coming. So, then she said, she told the boys, "Balaram, you stay in the front. Sridham and Sarup, you stay in the back, behind Krishna. Subal, you stay on Krishna's left. Angsu, you stay on Krishna's right." So in this way, going back and forth, her concern exceeded that of a cow with a newborn calf. Just completely transfixed on Krishna. Finally, Krishna bowed at her feet, embraced her, and turned her back with strong statements. So she stood and watched, motionless like a picture, until he had entered the forest. Then the gopis became so choked up, they couldn't sing any longer. Their feet were stumbling, their eyes were blocked with tears. But unlike Mother Yashoda, who had agreed to stop when told to by Krishna, they would not agree. So they followed Krishna further. But due to social considerations, they couldn't really express themselves completely, but at least they followed him. And he repeatedly told them, "Stop. Don't do like this. Go back. I'll meet you later." Finally, he made faces at them. shaking his head, biting his tongue at them. And then they stopped and joined his mother. Then Nanda Maharaj came, and he followed Krishna even further, accompanied by various of his ministers and brothers and other assistants. There were many auspicious omens, but still Nanda Maharaj was concerned and followed Krishna. Then Krishna reminded Nanda Maharaj that you have many important duties to perform, so you should go back. Just go back. So Nanda Maharaj turned back and just stood still, looking after Krishna until he had gone into the forest, until all the sounds that he and the boys were making had disappeared and they'd really gone deep into the forest. Then Nanda Maharaj engaged messengers to go back and forth, bringing news, you know, every half hour or every 15 minutes or so, bringing news. What had Krishna done in the last 15 minutes or half an hour? So this program was going on. But he and Mother Yashoda and the gopis, they all went back to the village and spent the whole day just thinking about Krishna in separation. Sarup is finding it very difficult to explain all this to the Brahman, to Jana Sharma. And he tells him that only someone with infinite capacity would be able to attempt such a description as this. Others would find it too much. So Krishna was feeling tremendous separation, particularly from the gopis, but also Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. But as he went deeper into the forest, playing with the boys, he became absorbed in their pastimes and sort of forgot about the other things and just became absorbed there. But later he prepared for meeting the gopis in the evening. So, this is a general introduction to the sixth chapter. Well, actually, it's the first half of the sixth chapter. But now, we're going to hear, tomorrow we're going to hear about the extraordinary love of the inhabitants of Goloka and just the extraordinary qualifications and characteristics of the inhabitants of Goloka, and particularly though their extraordinary love for Krishna, and then we'll hear some very extraordinary pastimes where their love for Krishna is demonstrated so vividly. It's just astonishing. And in this way it is established very clearly that Goloka is the topmost abode and the inhabitants of Goloka are the topmost of all devotees. Any comments or questions? How does day and night occur in Goloka Vrindavan? Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says his abode is not illumined by sun or moon. It happens. That was one of the things that Gopakumar, when he was Gopakumar still, first noticed, that the sun was passing through the sky and time was passing. So, in order to enhance the pastimes, even though that place is not subject to those things, but still those things are there to enhance the pastimes and divide the pastimes like that and give some sort of sequence to the pastimes. Yeah, so it is happening like that. Although it's not, the place is not dependent, but those things are still, place is not dependent on those things, but still, because everything is self-effulgent, but still, these things are working like that for the sake of ordering the pastimes. Yeah. Kedai.